I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story.
The First Division of the Coroner's Court is now in session.
Almost 2.5 years ago, 55-year-old Tanya Day boarded a train in country Victoria. On that journey, she was arrested and placed in a cell where she suffered a devastating fall.
The inquest findings into the death of Tanya Day will now commence.
Earlier this month, in a near-empty court in Melbourne.
Good morning. This is a live stream from Court 1 of the Coroner's Court.
Coroner Caitlin English handed down her findings into Tanya's death.
For the present, no hearing will proceed, which requires the physical attendance of any person at the Coroner's Court.
This inquest, the first ever to examine the role of systemic racism in a death in custody, made history. Today, justice for Tanya Day,
who died at St Vincent's Hospital on the 22nd of December 2017.
It's Monday, the 20th of April.
She was 55 years old.
Okay, Calla, can you tell me a little bit about Tanya Day and her family?
Tanya Day was a Yorta Yorta woman. She grew up around the Echuca area.
Calla Wahlquist is a reporter at Guardian Australia.
She was kind of known, particularly later in her life, she became heavily involved in activism, including like the Bendigo Street sit-in, and was involved in some death in custody protests. And she was a really big community member. She always took on the cooking for any community projects that were underway and always dragged her kids down to help out whenever there was some of their community that needed assistance.
Everyone from Melbourne to Echuca or Sydney actually knew who Mum was. They knew Tanya Day, and she was known for her cooking and her outspoken ways, but also her fashion. She was always having to be like dressed real deadly and extra with her, you know, sparkly bright clothes and high heels.
Tanya had 4 adult children.
My name is April. I am the daughter of Tanya Day. Also a proud Yorta Yorta, Wamba Wamba and Barapa Barapa woman.
On the day of her arrest, she was going from Echuca down to Melbourne to support her youngest daughter who was pregnant.
Can you talk me through what happened on the day that Tanya was arrested?
So we heard at the inquest that Tanya went to go to the Echuca railway station. She got on a bus down to Bendigo, which got in just after 2 o'clock, and at about 2:40 p.m. she got on a train from Bendigo that was heading down to Melbourne. It would have got her into the city at about 6 p.m. A couple of minutes after that train left the station at Bendigo, the train conductor, a man named Sean Irvine, was walking down the aisles checking everybody's tickets, and he saw the woman that we now know to be Tanya, who was lying asleep, and he said her feet were in the aisles, blocking the aisles of the train.
She was actually asleep. He woke her up. She was asleep. So Mum couldn't produce that ticket. She had lost it. And, you know, I'm not surprised. Mum was very forgetful and she would lose things all the time, you know, like as anyone would.
Train conductors who work for V-Line, which is the regional rail service in Victoria, have the option if they see a passenger who they think is unwell in some way, they can decide that they are a person who is not in control, which is a person who is intoxicated or unwell and needs assistance, or they can decide that they're a person who's unruly, which in the V-Line documents is described as a person who is a danger to staff or other customers or themselves. And what Mr. Irvine has decided upon seeing Tanya Day asleep on the train is that she is an unruly passenger and that he should call police. Sean Irvine said that he saw passengers who were asleep on the train about 3 times a week as part of his normal job, and he'd only ever called the police on one sleeping passenger, and that was Tanya Day.
His biased reasons had deemed her unruly, and he had told the train driver that, so they had called the police straight away, because when you say unruly, that's, you know, a code for the police to be called straight away. There's no questions to be asked.
Try receiving ever. 036 Central, the conductor's just requested police attendance at Castle Main, please. Over.
Okay, do you know what it's for? Over.
Yeah, he's telling me that there's a lady on the train that's under the influence of some recreational substance and she's got no idea where she is, who she is, she hasn't got a ticket, can't make any sense out of her, so he doesn't want her on the train, over.
No worries, I'll get police to meet you there, Castle Main, thank you.
Police arrived and they'd escorted Mum off the train.
Younger lady, Kenya, and last name Day, and no date of birth.
Just, I got, yeah, Tanya, date of birth 8/9/62. No safety warnings, no flags. M&I of 633-992-843.
So two police officers arrived and they were met by the conductor, who described to them that he had a woman on the train who he described as being of Aboriginal descent. They then got on the train, approached Ms. Day, realised pretty quickly that she was drunk. They said that they could smell alcohol, and then they asked her to get off the train, and they did that by actually picking up her suitcase and walking off the train with it, getting her to follow them.
Contact details for them. 720, I've got a mobile number and a landline. Mobile number is 04...
They made some efforts to call her family.
Can you go with the landline number as well?
Landline is 94...
To see if someone could pick her up. But they weren't immediately able to get someone to come and pick her up, so they decided they were going to take her in the divisional van back to the police station.
So that morning when you woke up, what did you have on that day? What did you have planned?
That day was actually the day after my daughter's fifth birthday. So we were sort of just, kids' birthday parties are exhausting. So we were just relaxing, just letting Kirawa open up her presents and everything. And Belinda had called me and she said, oh, Mum's been picked up for drinking. She's been arrested. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, I was concerned, but at the same time, you know, like Belinda was in contact with them and they said that everything was fine. So I was like, oh, okay, you know, the police are saying she's fine. You know, she's with them, she'll be safe. And, you know, look back now, how naive was I to sit back and believe that that was the case.
Okay, so they decided to take her to the police station. Was she under arrest?
Yeah, she was arrested for being drunk in public, although they never actually told Tanya that she was arrested.
She was then taken to Castlemaine Police Station.
Castlemaine Police Station was slightly short-staffed on this night. It was their Christmas party and they also had a number of people calling in sick. So she was checked in to the police station and taken to holding cell one. Some police officers went and got cushions to put on the bench because the bench is just a concrete bench in a concrete cell. At 4 o'clock, there was a decision made that they were going to do 20-minute observations on Tanya Day. Under the Victoria Police Manual, people who are assessed at the level that Ms. Day was, which is people who are intoxicated, have to be physically checked at least every 30 minutes, and they made a decision to do it every 20 minutes. But the first physical check actually happened about 50 minutes later.
So what did that physical check involve? What did they do?
We saw CCTV of this physical check and it involves the watch house keeper, which is leading Senior Constable Danny Walters, and another police officer. Danny Walters said that he spoke through the window and said, Tanya, are you okay? And he said he received a response of yes and then left. And what we know from the CCTV is that while Danny Walters was walking back to his desk, Tanya goes to stand up, she walks to the door, then she walks back to the bed, staggers and hit her forehead on the wall and caused the injury that caused her death. That fall was not seen by Danny Walters.
During that time, you know, we've seen they, you know, failed in their duty of care to monitor Mum effectively. You know, not long after she was placed in that cell, she had hit her head multiple times and one of them was a traumatic head injury which then caused a brain hemorrhage and that was a major bleed.
So after this fall, did they check on Tanya again?
So police conducted a number of other checks on Tanya over the next few hours. Most of them were conducted via CCTV. There were two more physical checks with long gaps in between them. And in all of the notes on the checks, they said that Tanya appeared fine and that she was moving around freely. From about 6:30, though, she's lying on the floor. And the cell checks still noted that she was fine, that she was moving around freely and that she appeared okay.
So, you know, from the moment that she had stepped into that police station, you know, her basic human rights were denied. She wasn't respected in any way, shape or form. You'll hear that time and time again. You can see that on the footage of the way they just left her laying on that floor by herself.
During the inquest, when Sergeant Edwina Neal was asked why she wasn't concerned that Tanya was sleeping on the floor, Sergeant Neal said, a lot of people like to sleep on the cell floor. It's not uncommon, particularly if people are drunk.
Did she get any medical help?
Just after 8 p.m, two police officers went into the cell to see if Tanya was fit to be released. She'd been in there for 4 hours, and that's usually how long they give intoxicated people to sober up. When they went into the cell, they lifted Tanya up off the floor, back onto the bench, and then they noticed a bruise on her forehead, a lump that hadn't been there when she'd been checked in. At that point, they decided to call the ambulance.
4100.
Okay, tell me exactly what happened.
So we've got a female in custody here for drunk.
Uh-huh.
And she's fallen over inside the cells, and she's got a lump on her head that we need to get checked out. Conscious, she's talking to us.
Is she breathing?
She's breathing fine.
All right, yeah. When did this happen?
She's been in our cell since 4 o'clock. I seen her slip over about an hour ago, but it didn't seem to affect her at the time, but we've gone back in to check her and noticed a lump on her head, and we thought we'll get that looked at.
You know, when Mum was in that cell, they didn't once check her alcohol reading, they didn't do any of her vitals.
What, is she completely alert?
She, not would say completely alert, but we can't tell the difference between her drunkenness and concussion.
All right, and what part of the body was injured? It's just her head.
Yep.
Is she still on the ground?
No, we've put her back on the bench with some mattresses and made her comfortable.
Is she still awake at the moment?
Yep.
All right, is she having difficulty staying awake? Or?
Oh, she wants to sleep, so yeah.
They didn't even think that there could be another underlying health issue that is why Mum is acting the way she's acting. Straight away, she's been, you know, stereotyped as just another drunk Aboriginal woman.
Well, I might leave you with her, but if she does become less awake,
yep,
or starts getting worse, give us a call straight back and let us know.
Got you.
If she becomes less awake and vomits, quickly turn her on the side, but worse anyway, call straight back.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye.
When Tanya Day first got to Bendigo Hospital, there was some confusion about exactly what was wrong with her.
You walked in and she was strapped down on the bed and she had the neck brace, but the one thing that you could see was that massive black bruise that covered half of her forehead. And, you know, we questioned the doctors and they were pretty blunt. They said, you know, your mum's probably not going to survive, and it was an aneurysm, and that's what they kept saying. It's an aneurysm, it's an aneurysm. We're like, but what about the bruise? No, the police told us that, you know, she had a small knock at this time. The police told us this. And, you know, because it's such a big bleed, it is an aneurysm. It's something she's lived with her whole life and she didn't know about it. Clearly that's not true.
So when the paramedics first assessed Tanya Day in the police cell, they hadn't been told about the severity of her fall or when she'd fallen. Police hadn't witnessed it. And they came to the view that her lack of movement might be due to drug intoxication rather than a head injury. Then they did some imaging and they saw a 5x7 centimetre brain bleed, and they realised something had happened, and she was flown to St Vincent's Hospital just after 3 a.m.
When did you find out about the full extent of her injuries?
It was when we had walked into the room, and that was like for me personally, and obviously for everybody else, but from my words, it was like my whole world had just fallen apart. And it was like everything had just flashed before me, and I just realised, like, fuck, I got to lose my mum.
When Tanya was flown to St Vincent's Hospital, she had emergency brain surgery to attempt to relieve the pressure on her brain. She was in a coma for a number of days and unfortunately passed away on the 22nd of December.
Next, the Day family take action and the inquest begins.
So it's been more than 2 years since Tanya died. What has happened in that time?
So in Australia, it's mandatory to hold a public inquest after a person has died in care or custody. But those inquests can often take a while to actually be delivered. We did some research at The Guardian a couple of years ago, and we found that the average wait time could be up to 2 years between someone dying and an inquest. While the family were waiting for the inquest, they started a campaign to get some momentum behind changing the law to abolish the crime of public drunkenness. Public drunkenness used to be illegal everywhere in Australia, but after the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody, which delivered its findings in 1991, every other state except Victoria and Queensland abolished that law. They still have crimes like being drunk and disorderly in public, but just being drunk in public is only illegal in Victoria and Queensland. And the Human Rights Law Centre did some research and found that around the time of Tanya's arrest, Aboriginal women were 10 times more likely to be charged with that offence than any other group of people. So Tanya's family wanted to make sure that nobody else was arrested for this crime and nobody else died in custody in the way that their mother had. They were involved in some protests, including the really big January 26th protest in Melbourne.
There is no question in our minds that Victoria Police should be held accountable.
Day family are going to do a press conference now with the press, so I don't know how you want to set that up.
They did media coverage, they ran a social media campaign.
But after that, we'll all march down to the courts together with the smoke in front.
And then at the first hearing of the inquest, they got a really big win. In the coroner's court in December 2018, coroner Caitlin English made a preemptive recommendation that the crime of being drunk in public be abolished in Victoria. And then in June of 2019, she made another really significant decision, which was that systemic racism would be included as a causal factor in Tanya's death. And that's the first time in an Indigenous death in custody inquest in Australia that systemic racism has been examined as a potential cause of death.
So how did the inquest play out?
So the inquest itself was set down for about 2.5 weeks in September of 2019. It went for 14 days, all up with a number of police officers giving evidence, ambulance officers, and the courtroom just filled with family of Tanya Day and supporters of her family. But just a couple of days before the inquest was due to begin, there was a big announcement from the Victorian government.
Victoria's announced it's abolishing the offence of public drunkenness.
For the family of Indigenous woman Tanya Day, the Victorian government's decision is bittersweet.
They met with the family and said that they would be looking at taking a public health approach to dealing with people who were drunk in public rather than a punitive police-based approach.
I think we also need to acknowledge that, you know, it was a major failure in the Victorian government's part to not implement these recommendations at the Royal Commission. And if they had done so, our mum and other Aboriginal people would still be here today.
So it sounds like a major battle for the Day family was won before the inquest even began.
Yeah, the main thing they'd campaigned for had been delivered, but they still didn't have an answer as to who, if anyone, can be held responsible for Tanya's death. So police and train staff are being asked whether their bias, unconscious bias against Aboriginal people or any systemic racism may have played a role in the way they treated Tanya in the hours leading up to the fall that caused her death.
Okay, so the police and the V-Line staff take the stand and they're able to be questioned about their own bias. How does that play out?
Coroner Caitlin English said in her findings that it was unsurprising that when asked if they believed they were racist, all of the witnesses said no. And that was certainly something that came out in the inquest the minute that the question of racism was raised. Witnesses became very defensive and it meant that some of their evidence became quite convoluted.
Did the police give any clear answers on bias, on systemic racism and the level of preparation or the level of training their police had had in that?
So the last witness to give evidence at the inquest was Superintendent Susan Thomas. She was nominated by Victoria Police to give evidence about the policies and procedures as they related to Tanya's death. She had no experience with custodial procedures. She'd never worked in a watch house. She wasn't able to comment on guidelines relating to custody and care. And so she wasn't able to answer most of the questions that the coroner's court had for her.
So basically the person that the police put forward to answer these big systemic questions about police and their treatment of Aboriginal people couldn't give any answers.
She was not fit for purpose as a witness, and the coroner said as much.
In a coronial inquest into our mother's death in police custody. No children should have to do this. Our mum should have never been subject to racial discrimination and denied her dignity and her right to life.
So how did this all wrap up?
So at the end of the inquest last year, the family...
We have had a coronial investigation, but what we want now is a criminal investigation.
They called for a formal investigation by the Director of Public Prosecutions into possible criminal negligence by police.
We want to know whether the police who should have cared for Mum committed an offence in denying her dignity and ultimately her life.
And they also called for a couple of formal apologies. They called for a formal apology from Victoria Police and one from V-Line.
We note that V-Line has not apologised for the role and their conduct played in our mum's death. We note that Victoria Police as an organisation has not apologised to us or the Aboriginal community for Aboriginal deaths in custody or failing their duty of care for our mum.
And then we waited. We knew that we'd get a finding at the first half of this year and that was it.
In early April this year, the findings are announced. Firstly, what was this like? We're in a bit of a weird time in world history, obviously.
So in the first week of April, the coroner's court sent out an email that said that the findings in the inquest into the death of Tanya Day would be handed down on the 9th. And they said they would be delivered remotely, but they didn't provide any more information. But when we called the court, they said they'd be a video link. And that's the first time that this court has ever actually done that. And they live streamed the entire process.
Hi. Yeah, I can hear you. Not sure what happened there. Sorry.
No.
Yeah, you were saying that there's sort of the one of the things about being physically in the courtroom is that people have to face you.
Yeah, the accountability. Obviously, we missed out on having that part of it. But I think too, it was better to have it on a live stream than have it not at all and have it emailed. I guess, you know, we have to take it for what it is during the COVID crisis.
Which was significant because it meant that all the community and supporters who had been in court and would be in court if it was actually heard in court were able to follow along online.
We definitely felt the difference. There has been a really huge online presence of support, which is great.
They were tweeting, the hashtag Justice for Tanya Day was trending that day, and so it allowed the family to have some kind of momentum behind the findings being released and to have that solidarity, even though the only member of the Aboriginal community who could be in court was the Koori Court officer, Troy Williamson.
The report by Dr. Talia Anthony on systemic racism notes unfair and discriminatory outcomes from laws that have universal application arise because agents of institutions adhere to dominant values and assumptions. Among these dominant assumptions include that Aboriginal people are drunks, drug addicts and unruly.
We're not going to be able to go through, you know, the whole detail of all of these findings. They are enormous, these reports that kind of come out. Can you talk us through the key findings of the coroner.
The first of the recommendations that she made, which is the one that she flagged last or in 2018, was to repeal the law of public drunkenness.
Wasn't that repealed much earlier, just before the inquest started?
No, the law actually hasn't been repealed yet. They have promised to do so, and they've begun doing work on what it will look like once they repeal that law, but the law itself has not yet changed.
I find Mr. Irvine made rapid decisions in less than a minute.
Another really significant finding that the coroner made was that there had been some unconscious bias on behalf of some of the people who made decisions about how Tanya Day was dealt with on the day of her arrest.
He made a snap decision that Ms. Day was an unruly customer, a danger to herself, and required police attendance for her removal from the train.
So the coroner also found that the train conductor had shown unconscious bias in the way that he chose to respond to seeing Tanya Day asleep on the train.
He could have also made a decision she was a passenger not in control, which the V-Line procedures calls for consideration of other options. Ms. Day was sleeping, and although she was no danger to herself or anyone else,
she found that these decisions were influenced by unconscious bias, and
I find the decision to define her unruly and to call for police rather than pursue other options has been influenced by her Aboriginality.
It was open for her to draw the inference that his decision-making was influenced by an unconscious bias in immediately deciding that Tanya was unruly and putting her in a higher category of response, and in deciding to call for police rather than to pursue other options. She found that that decision was influenced by Tanya's Aboriginality.
Okay, so that's a pretty enormous deal. What did she have to say about the police and any unconscious bias on their part?
The coroner didn't rule that police acted with the same unconscious bias or that their actions were in any way influenced by Tanya Day's Aboriginality. She found that they were responding to a series of events set in motion by the train conductor.
How did she come to that decision?
So although the coroner didn't find that police had acted with unconscious bias when dealing with Tanya Day, she did find that they treated her differently than they treated another intoxicated woman who they dealt with just a couple of hours after they saw Tanya Day. That woman wasn't arrested. She was driven home. And the coroner found that Tanya Day wasn't the benefit of, she said, this friendly kind of community policing, that although police had tried to call her family members and call the Aboriginal Community Justice Panel, they hadn't made any other efforts. She said there was an absence of problem solving on behalf of police.
Both Sergeant Neil and leading Senior Constable Walters thought at all times they were looking at Ms. Day as a conscious, breathing drunk, doing what all drunks do. This illustrates the power of stereotype and its resistance to correction.
Sergeant Edwina Neil and leading Senior Constable Danny Walters, the two people who had care of Tanya Day when she was in the police cells, demonstrated a cultural complacency regarding people who were drunk. And that meant they took a minimised approach to any medical needs.
And all aspects of her behaviour following were attributed by police officers to her being drunk and behaving as drunks do.
The coroner also found that Tanya was not treated with dignity and humanity in accordance with the Victorian Charter of Human Rights, and she required a human rights review of the Victoria Police training manual.
But after all of this, she didn't believe there was systemic racism in the police, in the treatment of Tanya.
The police officers' actions reflected an absence of problem solving and the genuine treatment of custody as a place of last resort, particularly for a minor offence. However, I am not of the view that there's evidence to make a finding the differential treatment was based on Ms. Day's Aboriginality.
The coroner found that despite these concerns that she raised with the police's treatment of Tanya Day, that none of that treatment was predicated on the fact that Tanya was Aboriginal.
Were there any more significant findings?
I now turn to criticisms of the coronial investigation.
One of the most significant findings that the coroner made was to change the Coroner's Act so that a coroner may give a police officer investigating a death a direction with regards to that investigation.
And I have regard to the lack of clarity, both real and perceived, regarding the independence of the coroner's investigator from Victoria Police.
There have been calls, particularly from the Aboriginal community, for a number of years that police ought not investigate deaths in police custody This recommendation doesn't go that far, but it does give the coroner, who is an independent person, a bit more control over that police investigation.
Therefore, I intend to make a recommendation seeking the legislative recognition that the coroner directing the investigation be able to make direction to the coroner's investigator rather than relying on the current arrangements of convention.
After all of these findings, were there any consequences laid out for the staff that treated Tanya that day?
Right at the end of her findings, the coroner said that she had looked into the request made by lawyers for Tanya's family that an offence of negligent manslaughter may have been committed by some of the police officers.
The totality of the evidence inclines me to assenting to a belief that an indictable offence may have been committed, and on this basis I intend to direct that the principal registrar must notify the Director of Public Prosecutions.
And she said she decided to refer that question to the Director of Public Prosecutions for a criminal investigation.
How significant is this, the fact that there could be a criminal investigation going forward?
It's quite a substantial finding, although the significance of it is sort of something that we have to wait and see. It's certainly significant if the DPP takes up that investigation. We don't often see criminal charges following from a death in custody, and certainly not following after the inquest. So if it does result in a criminal investigation, that will be very significant. At this stage, it is a finding that has the potential to be significant, but is not significant in and of itself.
How did Tanya's family feel about this outcome?
We are happy for that, because we have been saying from day one that especially the two police officers should be held accountable.
When I spoke to April Day about these findings, she said they did feel like it had been a good outcome, but they're also aware that it's the first step.
And criminal charges should be laid. So we definitely are happy for that, and we've welcomed it. And it's definitely a relief that the truth of what happened to Mum has been told. We're definitely thankful for what the process has brought, but we also acknowledge that this is just one part, and now we have to gear up for another fight.
Both you and I have followed a few coronial inquiries. I feel like the most common outcome is a change in a training manual. This seems a step above.
It certainly is a more substantial outcome than a lot of coronial inquests will produce. This, in already getting a promise to change the law with regards to public drunkenness, this inquest has already had effected more change than most death in custody inquests ever do. As you say, unfortunately, the recommendations are often not very strong, and then even those not particularly strong recommendations are not adopted.
In a statement, the Victoria Police say they will now take time to review the findings and recommendations. They say the force takes any death in police care or custody very seriously, and they acknowledge the suffering and loss of Ms. Day's family. A V-Line spokesman said the top priority always remained the safety of passengers and staff, and the organisation would give the coroner's recommendations the serious consideration they deserve before commenting further. That's it for today. Thanks to Keller Wahlquist for her time. You can read her extensive reporting on the inquest and the findings at theguardian.com. This episode was produced by Miles Herbert, Ellen Lee Beater, and Joe Koning. The executive producers are Miles Martignoni and Gabrielle Jackson.